What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. We're finally back. I think that on the car ride over, I decided that I'm going to skip all the stupid like Twitter shit at the beginning. Like, people don't actually follow us because of that, and I'm sure that it's just annoying. So I'll only do that at the end from now on, because fuck it. Yeah, so we've been gone for a long time. I was gone for a month and a half. And I apologize for that. I'm not going to bore you too much with what it was. I just got busy with other work and I didn't have a chance to really do anything else. I was like locked in my house most of the time. So it is what it is. My bad. That being said, we are back, and today we have on Bus Driver, and Bus Driver put out a new record, and I've been meaning to do an episode with him forever, and this was a great conversation, in my opinion. I haven't had a chance to really have a good conversation with anybody in quite some time, because like I said, I've been being kind of a hermit, and so the conversation, it's long, for one, and for two, there are some sensitive topics that we talk about. We talk about politics a lot, we talk about race a lot. I know that I listen to some podcasts where race gets brought up and I hear white people discuss race and it annoys the fuck out of me, and I want to just like shout at the people that are doing it, and sometimes I do while I'm in my car listening. I'll just start shouting for no reason like a crazy person, but yeah, so if there are any of those moments where I come off like an idiot, I apologize. I don't really care to hear your hate mail. If you don't like what we're talking about, you can turn it off and not listen. No skin off my back. I really I love you guys, but I don't really give a shit, because it was just something that it was stuff that we wanted to talk about, and I think that Bus Driver has really interesting ideas about race, and if you read his Twitter, you get a hint of that, and he's just a really fucking smart dude that I respect, so I wanted to like talk to him about shit that's been going on in the world, because right now the world is fucked up. You know, yesterday was a mass shooting in San Bernardino, and you know, the day before that there was other or like just tonight, like somebody fucking got killed, and it's just been crazy. And I just wanted to like talk to somebody that has good ideas about things. Over the break, man, I got a lot of shit for the last couple interviews. Like, people don't like the intros, apparently, or people that are like new to the show that tune in for the first time. They're like, yo, bro, I don't understand why it takes fucking 15 minutes to get to the interview. For that, I want to tell you guys, like, yo, the format is always the same. There's an intro where I talk about my shit, because then I try not to talk about too much about my shit during the podcast. I try to talk about other people's shit. And so if you don't like this part, remember that you can fast forward past this part. A lot of the podcasts that I listen to in my personal time, I fast forward past the first like 5 to 7 to fucking 15 minutes, because I don't want to hear all the bullshit. I just want to hear the interview part. I don't want to hear the advertisements, whatever. So again, no skin on my back if you fast forward past this, which brings me to another point. Man, somebody commented on the site and it kind of chapped my hide. They were like, for the last interview with Illmac, they're like, you get props for these interviews? He's like, all you did was interrupt the guest the whole time to talk about your feelings and your theories, like, you know, blah, 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 blah. To that, I want to thank you for saying that, because if I'm doing that too much, my bad. I don't have anybody keeping me in check when I do my interviews. I just do them. And so, you know, if I'm doing that too much, yeah, go ahead, chime in. On the other hand, like, man, fuck you. I could tell that you're like some fucking battle rap fan that just like tuned in for the first time. So, you know, eat a dick, like be more respectful about it and hit somebody up in like a positive critique way, instead of a like, I can't believe people like this, like you fucking suck, man, like fuck, come on, dude. So anyway, yeah, positive critiques from you guys, don't be scared to chime in. I like that shit. I like talking to people that listen. I like hearing you guys' opinions, and I like hearing about what direction you want the show to go. The direction of this particular episode, since I've done multiple podcasts with Bus Driver spanning back all the way to like 2011, you know, we just had a convo. We just had a conversation about fucking life and about politics and about, you know, about shit. And it gets dark and it gets uplifting at times. But it's different. It's not like a life story episode. So it's not what we usually do here. But I had a good time, and he killed it on the performance video. So I'm not going to sit and bullshit too much longer. I just want to get into the interview with Bus Driver. I'm glad to be back. We have a bunch of these lined up, and I'm excited about it. And then it's almost Christmas time, so my mom's going to be in town, so I'm going to do another episode with her, and I'm excited about that because those are some of my favorites. And yeah, I'm sorry that I took so long to make a new episode, and I'm happy to fucking talk to you guys again. That being said, here is my interview with Bus Driver.
Doing that and a few other projects, what came together was this body of work called Thumbs. And
did the Fun mixtape get put out?
Thumbs is the Fun mixtape. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay, my bad.
The idea of the Fun mixtape got overtaken by whatever Thumbs became. But I can't really explain it. It's just it's something that happened. It's really a continuation of my last record, kind of in a lot of ways, but kind of an extreme kind of just take on that whole agenda. But it's really me trying to, like, rap a little bit without a lot of filters in my way and trying to get back into a headspace like that.
What sort of filters have you been applying?
I don't know, just anything, you know, anything that's keeping me from doing something honest or good and honest, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I've been making music for some type of market for a while, regardless of how unencumbered or irresponsible or freewheeling it is, you know what I mean? So it's like sometimes you get conventions you kowtow to, or just things, you know, and it's just... Yeah, so Thumbs is just me kind of like, kind of like opening up.
Like, is it trying to, like, fall in love with music again in a sense? Is that what you mean? Like, when you say you've been making music for a market, does that feel, do you mean that that feels contrived or something?
Well, you know what? I'm really lucky because no one tells me what to do, so.
Right.
I mean, we all make something to fit in a place, but, you know, I'm fairly lucky. But that being said, you know, I do try to do certain things. I do try to be a certain type of rapper, but those ideas are done, though, now. They're done.
When you say you try to be a certain type of rapper, I'm asking you these questions for myself, more or less, because I'm going through that kind of shit. Like, do you feel pigeonholed in what you've made yourself ever?
Completely, but that... I mean, I feel pigeonholed only from a certain point of view, you know? And that's what I mean. Like, it's all about perspective. And with Thumbs, I just kind of cleared the perspective a tiny bit in order to get to another place. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, just being more honest, you know? Like, you know, I came up learning about music in Lemur Park, and I come from a upper middle class background. I've traveled a lot, and just making all that make sense with the type of motherfucker I am. Really, you know what I mean? Rather than, you know, peering through rap or anything. It's like, rap is just a tool, you know what I mean?
Right.
But you know that more than I do, I think.
I don't know. I honestly don't think that I know anything more than you know. I always think, this is going to sound like ass-kissing or blowing smoke, but, like, you're one of the most intimidating people to talk to, because I just think you're so smart, and I get really, like, nervous around smart people. I don't like being the second smartest in the room.
I'm an idiot who's being just, I'm an idiot on top of another idiot. You have no idea.
I feel like everyone always, I don't know, it's funny how the grass is always greener. Did you try anything different with the release of this one?
Yeah, I didn't do a lot of the normal stuff I do.
Yeah.
I kind of let the people have it. My infrastructure is kind of transitioning, and I let it just kind of be, kind of to see what I can do alone and to not expend too many resources. And it just kind of... fall into what the climate is now, you know what I mean?
So you just kind of did it by yourself?
Well, I did it by myself, you know. I've been with Ninja Tune and other things for a while, and I'm not with any of those right now, and I'm just putting out things. I put it out through Temporary Whatever, which is an imprint I've been putting through Alpha Pup for years, and it's been dormant, but we just opened them doors, and we put thumbs out, so.
Nice. Now, this is not a gossip show, obviously, but that, like, leads into a transitionary question that you can dodge if you want to. But obviously, some things have been shaken up amongst the land of Hellfire, and if you want to speak on that stuff, you can. If you don't, we'll just edit that question out.
Well, I stopped working for Hellfire Club last year, or the end of last year, or the beginning of this year, around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it dissolved because of some things mainly involving the release of Milo's record. There were some problems with how that was run.
Right. And you guys can go listen to the podcast with Milo that we just did if you want to hear his side of that story. And then, yeah.
But for me, at the end of the day, I'm very happy of all the work we did and of the genuine momentum and genuine movement that we were trying to eke out of this fertile LA playing field. So I don't think anything we did was false or wrong, or that those records or that work is wrong. That work happened, you know. And, you know, I have love for everybody, but, it didn't work out. So, and that's changed everybody in different ways, you know.
Do you feel like it's kind of cyclical for things to just eventually fall apart in L.A. or something?
Nah, I think that, I don't know. I think that places and scenes and collectives and people are very important, you know. And even in this era of everyone being in the cloud and being online and DMing people, and that's how you make a song, you have to be with people. You have to foster something, you know what I mean? And so that renewed my faith in that shit. And I always have faith in that, you know what I mean? Because that's where this music comes from. You don't participate in American music without understanding what relationships bring it about. You know what I mean? Like, it's just how you do it.
Right.
You're not going to make American music without a bunch of niggas sitting in a room doing something. You're not going to do it. That's how it's always happened.
So many great rap records, like, almost feel like they came from people sitting in a room together and sharing an inside joke or something. You know what I mean? The best hooks, the best chants, the best things like that.
Well, I mean, everyone sees the byproduct of what people do, but the songwriting is collaborative, people doing things. Look at Marvin Gaye, whoever writes Stevie Wonder. When you see him writing songs with people, it's like a social happening. It's like, oh shit, this is why this makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and to me, that's my relationship with music. Cause I came up doing music in the Mert Park and then doing music by myself, but doing it in the Mert and having that type of social gathering be a part of how we even interact or how we would, you know, and like, it's important for that to be in the music because we all know. I mean, everyone likes to act like money is this agendaless just resource to pull from. But people who give you money to do things, they may want you to promote certain agendas. But if your music is rooted in a place with people and a desire, you have an advantage, you know, and you have power away from the power structures because, you know, power structures want you to promote their shit. That's it, you know? And I think music now, even though music, I really love music now, but I really think that music now doesn't take that on realistically. There's an idea, there's a complete celebration of money, of the blow up, of having your penis just like projected onto a wall and just like fire shooting out of it, which is dope, but it's like, who's writing that check? You know what I mean?
Right.
You know? And it's like, I don't like to preach that shit to people, but I think it's interesting because we live in such a weird futuristic world where the agendas are so insidious and so pronounced and just there. It's like, damn, nigga, you don't see it?
Yeah.
It's like, how can you not? It's like, you can put a correlate. You can connect. You can connect Seth Rogen to Sony to the Pentagon, you know, just like that. And it's like, well, you know, so if that's there, you really have to think about stuff, you know? Like,
right.
You know? So it's
As far as the glorification of, like, the blowing up and the making the money and having things and stuff and rapping about riches, like, don't you think part of that, though, comes from a fantasy element almost of music where you can talk about the things you want that almost seem completely impossible when you're growing up, you know?
Yeah, well, that's a part of it. Music's good for fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was just talking about how artists really feel about their business, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
But you know, it's hard to say that, because, you know, when there's a lot of money in your face, you know, why would you not, why would you say no, you know, ever, you know?
Right.
And so that's hard. But yeah, it is fantasy, and rap is the best fantasy maker. What's a better myth maker than rap? What are the more hilarious or polarizing pop culture figures that we've had recently who haven't been some rapping ass motherfuckers? You know,
right?
Like, it's people like that shit, but you know, I don't know what I've done. I think a lot of the music we make and I make, there's lots of myth in it, but there's a lot of truth in it. There's a lot of confusion. And a lot of just, like, lonely, just nigga shit. Just like, oh, I'm in my room, and I thought of this thing, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But anyway, I shouldn't share that.
Well, and I think a lot of what, I mean, me personally, looking from the outside into what you guys do, there's so much deep reference into whether it be pop culture or literature or whatever. It's like, it's almost like you guys are able to kind of reflect and bring a context to the media that you've been consuming, in a sense. Do you think that's accurate at all?
Yeah, we do. Me personally, how I feel about it, yeah. I always felt it was like a protest. Even as a kid, when I would write bars.
Shout out to the fucking iPhones.
I'm blowing up right now.
You're all good. That's that money calling.
My dad called me.
That's that money calling.
Shout out to my dad. It is money calling. But for me, when I was a kid, I always thought, like, rapping sophisticated and using metaphors and using anachronistic writing styles instead of, like, hoodie rap songs, I thought that was like a protest.
Mm.
Like, you know, because I always felt lesser than and not that smart and always, like, even though I came from a good background, I always felt like we were just a little less. And I was like, what if I was smart?
We who were.
Oh, I just meant just we as in people of color, black
okay,
people
yeah. No,
in,
yeah.
in my world. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to draw more attention to it than I would like to. It just, I have to be honest. You know?
Right. Well, you got to understand, from in my eyes, we could have been, you know, whoever. You could have been talking about the bloat. You could have been talking about.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get the context. So,
oh, no,
yeah.
no, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so while I was kicking raps, I was like, man, this is some, we're better than that. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I don't know, I've always kept that. So I guess it's like a protest, you know what I mean, to be like. But it's not really because rap's so smart anyway, so it's like, to me, rap's so intellectually, like, engaging. You can do so much with it, and it's like, it's kind of too bad that it gets kind of reduced to this ridiculous, I don't know, it's people appreciate it as an art form, but I don't know, there's more to it than people give credit, you know?
I agree. I mean, I think at this point, it's a vehicle, and there are so many different ways to drive that vehicle. And I personally love where rap music is at right now. I think it's been great recently. Like, I think there are almost like new genres kind of being invented by singular artists. And I love that, you know? And, But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I'm getting at. Other than I want you to keep telling your story about why you felt lesser, I guess.
Well, I mean, there's not much more to it than that. It's just a basic thing. But that's just me because I was a sensitive kid. And that's how I dealt with it. But yeah, man, how we write is really stupid, though. I will acknowledge that. Yeah. I mean, I say we, but I should just be talking from. I should be speaking for myself. I write.
How do you write?
I write from a very irresponsible place. I go against some fundamental rap rules.
Like what?
I take perspective and I throw it out of the window. And then I put it back later on.
Explain. You talk like you tweet. You speak in riddles.
No, but I'm saying, I'm talking to you because you're a rap writer. I'm thinking in your head, I'm talking to Lee. Man, Lee's a serious rap writer, man. You kidding me? I'm talking shop.
I love it.
With that dude. Well, I feel like a lot of raps start from perspective. A lot of dudes who I know start from perspective. I'm here. I never would come from there, mainly for a lot of personal reasons, but I began to appreciate that as a way to go about doing things. Because then you just bring in imagery, and then you put perspective in the imagery, and you get a bus driver verse. But, you know, that's just me playing with some shit. Because I guess in the crews that I grew up in as a kid, I wasn't really always proud of who I was in Congress with everybody. You know what I mean? If everyone was on some shit like, oh, I'm a crib, or I'm a this kind of nigga, I'd be like, oh, I'm just me. You know what I mean? And like that would work, but I would more start from a point of I got these styles and these images, and then here I am. You know what I mean?
Don't you think that's funny? Because nowadays, that's so celebrated. Being the outsider is, like, the most celebrated thing to say, like, I'm not this, I'm not that, this is what I am. Like, that's what kids, that's what 18-year-olds are blowing up on now.
Yeah.
And you're saying that you ran from that.
Well, I mean, nah, I was that. Yeah. I ran from that in my writing.
Yeah.
I ran from being that outright. Mm-hmm. Because I was always like, I got these ideas first, these images first. I got these ideas, but I'll put myself in that scenario too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Rather than be like, nigga, I'm in the hood. It's me. Or it's rather like, and then there was a cosmic storm, and I was there. Da, 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 da. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like you create a context that's outer worldly, and then like you look and you're like, oh shit, that nigga's right there inside all that shit. Like, why is he there? You right. know what I mean? But he just explained why. But, you know, it's cryptic, but, nigga, that shit was kind of tight, you know? And that's how I would arrive at being fresh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I only did that because I was like, nigga, what kind of perspective could I have, you know?
Yeah.
If Mike is doing this, if LA Cool's doing this, if Volume Tim's doing this, I'm like, well, I start from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
But
that's just rap shit. But rap shit is literary shit, man. That's just literary shit because that translates into other shit.
Yeah. Are you happy? You a happy guy? You know, Mike, I did a podcast with Mike and he asked me that, and it's the hardest question to answer, but it's kind of a great question.
Definitely not. I would say definitely not the end of this year. But that being said, I have everything I can to be happy.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm stealing our conversation from Mike. But I mean, basically, every once in a while, don't you have to kind of like just step back and be like, wait. Like I'm getting to live to work instead of work to live, kind of like
it's a real privilege, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't lie.
Why the fuck aren't we happy?
Because we got high standards. I mean, not high standards. We have certain standards that haven't been met, but I mean, I'm relatively happy. I know that I'm Yeah, I know it could be way worse.
Are you happier now than you have been in the past, perhaps? That's sometimes how I have to tell myself, like, yeah, you're not happy, but you're happier now than before.
Yeah, I've been, you know what? I won't say this. You know, I think happiness is too bourgeois. I'm be completely honest.
Mm-hmm.
Do I feel capable? Do I feel energized? Yeah, I feel ready to go. Do I feel, you know, when I look at people and I talk to them, do I feel engaged? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, am I the happiest when I go home? No, but...
Right.
But maybe that's ambition calling.
Right.
being like, don't be happy. Keep going.
Right. Oh, dude, I totally agree with that. Like, people say, oh, be more positive. I'm like, man, but sometimes when I see some negative shit, that's what puts a spark in my ass to, like, make it better. You know what I mean? Like, I gotta work harder, do something cooler.
Yeah. But it's hard to be zen, man. I'm trying to get there.
Yeah.
Zen, I don't know if that's the proper way to... But anyway.
It makes sense in context. So do you...
Close enough.
I feel like what you were saying earlier is that you were running, or not running, but almost avoiding talking about your actual life in your writing. Do you find yourself doing that more now?
No, I would talk about my life. I would just make it, I would make it outer worldly. I would exaggerate it to the point where, because I would feel like, I would just exaggerate it, make it colorful. I don't talk about my life as much right now, but... I don't talk about my life in a way that is overtly entertaining. I don't know. How I talk about my life ain't really... Sometimes when I listen to my shit, I'm like, who is that person? I'm like, I don't, you know, I want to kick it with that person, but I don't know for how long. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
But that being said, you know, there's something to it. But...
Do you got anybody that you talk about your feelings to? I'm not trying to make this like the super emo podcast.
Nah. I like talk about this because I completely avoid talking about it with. I completely avoid talking about it with my friends, so it's good to talk about it on the internet.
Right.
Perfect.
I honestly use talking about my feelings on the internet as a crutch to avoid them in real life, I think.
I mean, I'm talking about it with my friend on the internet, right. So it's like, it's some tightrope shit.
Well, because it's funny, like, I almost feel like we have a completely contrasting concept about how to approach our, I guess, emotions in music, because I use it completely, I'm like 100% using my emotions and like like there's no creating worlds or like, you know what I mean? Like I'm not creating imagery. I'm just talking about like, here's why I feel like shit, because I never talk about why I feel like shit in real life. And so I just want to use the music to get that out so that I don't ever have to like deal with it on a day-to-day basis.
That's amazing, man.
Does that make sense?
I think that's why you're a great writer, man.
I don't know if I ever told you this. I probably have, but like one time when I used to live in Santa Barbara a long, long time ago, you were playing a show with Tumex at some bar there, and I went, and I probably have told you this, but we ended up ciphering afterwards, and you were, like, so amazing in the cipher, and I was, like, a young 19-year-old, like, piece of shit white kid rapper who, like, thought he was cool and just, like, sat there going, oh, and, like, just tripping over my own tongue when I was rapping around you. And so, I remember, like, when I put my last record out, and you were, like... I listened to the record and, you know, you've got a grasp on your voice, the tool that you have, like it's the way you use it is actually quite beautiful. And I went, oh my God. Like I had little butterflies in my stomach. I was like, here's this guy that like made me feel so inept fucking 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like,
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I'm ciphering is really important to me still.
Yeah. Is it?
It proves to me that, that it's still there.
Yeah.
But you know.
That's so funny because I haven't done that in probably close to 10 years now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It makes me wonder, like I've been going through a crisis. We're venting to each other here. I got yelled at on my break that I like talk about myself too much on my podcast, but fuck those guys.
That's dope.
Yeah, but I'm going through a crisis where I haven't written in a long time. And part of me, but that ties into the ciphering. I haven't had a desire to cipher in forever. So like, I'm like, is it still there? You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know, but.
Well, it's not, I think rapping a lot just makes it easier. It's like, oh, you know, I've got a grasp of this.
Yeah. Do you do it at shows or where do you do it at?
Oh, only, I do a lot of my improvising at shows. I play with a band occasionally, and there's a lot of improvising in that. And, it's good to be limber. It helps you, you know, stretch your mind creatively.
What's the band?
Oh, I play with, the Underground Railroad.
Who's that?
JMD, he's the leader. They used to be the band that backed the Fellowship.
Okay.
Back in the days for, like, inner city griots and, Park Bench people, they played that song.
You guys play out?
Yeah, we played We played the Echo the other day, but we're going to play Low End Theory this coming week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so this will come out the day that you're playing Low End Theory, so you can plug that right now. If you're listening, you can catch my friend Reagan at Low End tonight. There you go. We plugged it. You know what I was thinking about on the car ride over? When I was doing the Knox City thing, we went and filmed a piece on a band that you were doing, and you had like gloves that. What was that band called?
Man, I wasn't quite prepared to take that on. We were called Physical Forms.
That's right, Physical Forms. Okay.
Yeah, we had a lot of tight shit. I've been combing through some of those sessions.
You still in touch with those guys?
Yeah, it's just a whole, man, we made music a completely different way. It was very informative. I really liked that.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was cool. Did you guys put a record out?
No, never. No. Never.
You going to revisit that or what?
Not in that way. I can't, because I don't even know how to do half that shit anymore.
Yeah.
But we're going to, some of that is going to come to light, I don't know. I think what's really interesting about rap mythology, though, is that you always hear dudes, I don't know. I feel like in rap, there's always a pressure to get out of rap and, like,
do other things.
But, like, yeah, I feel like that impetus is, like, immediate at this point. You know, it's like you come into rap with a few, which is tight, because it makes, you know.
Like, you mean, like, people coming into the game going, like, yeah, I'm not just a rapper. Like, I do fashion. I do this. Yeah, do that.
Well, fashion is a given. Yeah, you got to do fashion.
Right.
But, like, I'm wondering if people are going to start getting into, like, I'm also a doctor. Like, I'm also a pilot. I'm also an astronaut, you know.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if you're that sophisticated, but I don't know. Just, like, switch it up a little bit, like, you know.
Well, so the interesting the thing that you brought up earlier, kind of about, you know, when you start rapping, you become this thing and you have to, like, live up to this thing that you are as a rapper. But there are a few rappers that I know, you being one of them, that I feel like, and you may disagree with this, but I feel like are so extremely creative that creativity is, like, constantly kind of pumping out and pumping through them. And I just wonder, are there other mediums that you use that people don't know about? Like, do you write folk songs? Do you fucking write poetry that people never see? Do you paint? Do you do any of that shit? You got any hobbies outside of rap?
Yeah, not a lot. I mean, I write essays and poems.
I've read some of your essays, and I think you're great at prose.
Oh yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah. I mean, I've been put a lot out, but I've been writing that, and I'm hoping to get some of those out.
Yeah.
But I'm very deliberately inside of some process right now. But yeah, not too much. There are some other songs that I do. I have a couple side projects privately that I tend to, you know, just doing production and stuff of that nature. But as far as writing goes, yeah, I do have a lot of poems. I actually have a book that I'm waiting to put out.
Nice.
And but it's a poems written under very specific conditions, written very quickly. But hopefully I'll get that out.
Self-assigned constraints.
Yeah. Just written really quickly, really short poems.
Yeah.
I think poetry is kind of an embarrassing medium. But I give
into it. Very self-indulgent, huh?
Yeah, it is. But I give into it.
Those rap, though.
But rap makes sense because people want to turn up.
Right.
So there you go.
Yeah.
But no one wants to turn up to poetry. Or do they?
I don't know.
Well, they do. I'm robbing poetry of its gifts. But that being said, man, I love the word. I love the word. I'm really that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it shows.
It's very embarrassing.
Yeah. No, I don't. Why would you be embarrassed of that?
Because other people can deflect. I cannot.
I'm joking. I mean, I don't know. Well, like, here's the thing. I'm going to bring up something maybe heavier than I have a grasp on, but, like,
kind of joke.
No, I know. I know you are, but I'm gonna go. I'm gonna like look for the truth in the humor. But like, when you say it's embarrassing, like, is it embarrassing to be like a really fucking smart black dude or what?
Tight.
Well, is that a bad question?
You know what? That's a very interesting thing to ask. It has been. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm that smart. B, it depends on where that is, you know what I mean?
Like where you're at during the day or whatever?
Or in my life or anywhere, you know. I've gotten the privilege of being able to travel a little bit, mainly because of rap, and being a smart black guy in certain circles in certain countries, it makes you feel a certain type of way. But in the USA, you really have a really particular feeling, you know. I spent a lot of time in France, and I've felt very fetishized and very, you know, otherly in certain circles, but also felt very, you know, included in a new way. But you know, I've led a fairly privileged life. People have always been nice to me. I fly under the guise of the arts, so people are like, "Oh, you're weird, and you say things." Yes, yes, yes. You know what I mean? So that is a very convenient banner to fly under. So I recommend it if you can. But
what is that like to feel fetishized? That's an interesting term. And I was reading. I was reading something about that just today, of like how there's been a historical fetishization of like, you know, white women fetishizing the black man.
Yeah. Well, it's age old. It's been a part of us for a while, and it's hardwired into our entertainment, you know, how we do everything. I was watching Amy Schumer's movie and made me think of that. Just all the athletes in that movie, all the glistening black bodies readied to entertain and dazzle. It's just, you know, it's very like, it made me twitch, but I guess it's to be expected, you know, we're bred for strength. Yeah, well, we definitely were. That's how it happened, you know?
Right.
I think I love all the black entertainers of our world right now, because they're so fantastic. They make you forget. It's like, you guys are so wonderful. You make me forget that we were bred to be who we are, you know, that we were unmoored from any history or language, kept away from knowledge to an alarming degree, even to this point. And it's like, but they're so good. They make you forget it all. Our black celebrity class, they're so good, you know. But when you think of your actual black friends, you're like, what? Wait a minute. That's not true. Or your actual family, you're like, wait a minute. That's not true. But anyway, that's my tirade on celebrity.
As a white rapper, an overly self-aware white rapper, I've become like very conflicted about like my existence lately, particularly with all the other white rappers kind of like fucking everything up and being shitheads. And your Slim Jesus's and your Iggy Azalea's and your whomever else, like there are, the list goes on of like overtly racist caricature white rappers. And I don't know, man, like there's just such a long history of American blacks being so fucking awesomely creative and in the music industry specifically, and then everything getting stolen from them and then popularized by a white person. And it's crazy now that like rap has been around for what seems like so long, because it's been like 30, 35 years. But all of a sudden right now there was like the great white wave where like it was 2 years in a row where it was like a white dude was the biggest rapper and then a white chick was the biggest rapper. And it just felt like, it just felt like the Rolling Stones stealing from Muddy Waters all over again or something. I don't know.
I think that there's always a pretense to these circumstances. And I think that the pretense is that we think that we're better than that, that we are like moral, that we care, that we want to give, we want the innovators to be the first. We want to see them do it. You know, in case of American music, we want the black originator to be the one rather than the more marketable guy. But the reality is that that doesn't happen, you know, and it's there's a choice, you know, and it's a lot of it are choices by people. A lot of it is just how the market's done, you know, and it's like even, I mean, there are black artists who do really well, but their businesses may not function to where, you know, other people of color or other people in their business, you know, benefit as much, you know, but I don't know, man. I don't really know about that. I don't really know. It's hard to really feel like you own anything that's like music or like intellectual property. You know what I mean? Like, I always have this question. I always ask this of people, like, do you feel like you own your music? Like, this is a part of your culture, or is this just something you are part of that's on the internet? You know, is this just some thing? You know what I mean?
Or, yeah.
And it's like, it's hard to like, people don't really know what is what. And it's like, it's important to make the distinction because if you have something that's yours, that you produce, it's, yeah, value. You know what I mean? You know, and for me, I think rap is a part of like my culture, how I grow up, like my people, you know what I mean? And for, you know, to me, you're a part of that because you understand rap in a true way, and it's like that when people I think it's cool that we make money off rap, that it's a business, but you have to understand these things developed out of these certain confluences of pressures, you know what I mean? Like hip-hop happened in the 70s because of particular pressures, you know. Mm-hmm. the economy was in the toilet, you know, New York was coping with it in a particular type of way. You know, people on the West Coast were coping with it a different type of way. In New York, they made hip-hop as a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you can't, I mean, people can ignore that, but if you, but why would you? Because that's fascinating. You know what I mean? Why, right. why would you take that power away from hip-hop? Mm-hmm. And like, but that's what black music is. It's an organic response to a confluence of crushing pressures. I mean, that's what jazz is. You know?
Right.
And it's like, so that being said, you know, these are all, we're all making really pretty slave songs and, you know, we should, you know, keep that knowledge in there. But that shit is not going to happen. And we're going to have another Iggy in a, you know, another right. few years.
Right. I, that kind of, line of thought reminds me also of what, I used to just think it was like an annoying internet argument when people would talk about real hip hop versus rap, like rap versus hip hop, or like
yeah.
It would be a bunch of like white internet nerds talking about like what real hip hop is. And now as I've gotten older and more fucking conflicted, like I said,
yeah,
I've deemed that to be, I think that's like a racist argument now. Like, am I crazy for thinking that that's. That like a bunch of white people trying to tell a culture what is real and what is not, particularly when like the shit that gets deemed real hip hop is generally like the more like lyrical, like what fucking white folks would deem as more intelligent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really, this is I've always had a problem with this. It's really difficult because it's heavily racialized, you know?
Right.
I think there's whole eras of rap rooted in this type of thinking that have been completely whitewashed, and not really intentionally. They meant well, but what they were doing was they were isolating a certain type of experience as being this is the crown achievement of rap, these set of experiences, you know what I mean? And I felt that way about a lot of rap in the aughts, you know, in the early aughts that came about.
Mm-hmm.
When all those great labels, you know, Rhymesayers, Def Jux, and everybody, and all those, you know, and Anacon, and you had the Project Blow people, you had Quantum, you know, all those acts. I always felt like that movement was very, there was a racial element to it that was not really eked out enough. I mean, I talked about it in my record, Fear of a Black Tangent, because I just felt like there was just a certain type of character that was being prioritized, you know? And if you look at all those groups now, the groups that are still relevant now, you know, have those stories, you know, they, they have those stories, and, you know, it's, we see what that does. It makes you exist longer.
Wait, which stories? Clarify that.
Well, just the stories of the winners. I'm being nebulous because, but yeah, the stories of the winners. There's, you know, there's certain stories that work for certain type of hip hop that's considered good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like,
quote unquote, real.
Yeah. There's a certain spin on the Black experience there that is not that inclusive of a lot.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So what I mean is like acts from that era and the aughts, like, and I mean, in the aughts, they really thought, you know, they really idolized the 90s too. But, you know, I felt like it was a chance for a lot of white rappers to get their flex on. And all I'm saying is that those acts have kept their grip. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's really what the truth is with music, is like, who is the audience? You know what I mean? Like, what's your audience? The audience, we're not, you know, the overwhelming majority of people are going to want certain type of stories. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, they want to be able to listen to music that they're looking in a mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going on a tangent, so let me stop.
I just have always kind of found that interesting, and like more so recently now that I've like been around more and more artists, and because I feel like I'm guilty of it in the past of saying like, oh, real hip hop, this and that and the other, and now I look back and I go, oh, this shit that I listen to now that I love so much, when I was like 16, I would have been like, this is like ignorant, and I think that ignorant is such a fucking loaded word in and of itself. Like, I hate when people talk about quote unquote ignorant rap. I don't know what I'm getting at, other than like, I've never had the real hip hop conversation with a black, like, no black person, no black friend of mine has ever brought up what is real hip hop versus rap. That's only a conversation that white people have, I feel like.
Yeah, it's polarizing agendas along race lines. You can't really ignore that. And I always felt personally that I needed to kowtow to that. Like, markets, like, I always thought that I worked in certain markets because I rap well. You know, that's why a lot of my bass is pretty white, because my rap is hyper-intelligent. But, you know, I came up rapping with dudes who rapped hyper-intelligent too, but a lot who did it, you know what I mean? And, like, me personally, I did it alongside them. Mm-hmm. As if it was no thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'd have my homie Misfit or CR on a song with me, and we'd all just be barring out, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's my relationship with it, so I don't, like, prioritize, you know what I mean? And it's like, but, like, most of my, a lot of people don't share that, and they're like, oh, that's weak, you know, he's talking about bitches and hoes. It's like, but you don't understand, like, what's happening there. You know, you're not putting that, because that perspective on top of this music does something. If you don't see what that does, then, you know. But
that's what I'm saying, is like art in and of itself is so subjective, and goes back to what we were saying about the vehicle. You know what I mean? Like, rap as a medium that is a vehicle. Like, you might drive the car. I mean, this is like on the nose since your name is Bus Driver, but you might drive that bus one way and someone else might drive it another way, but you both still know how to drive, and there's an inherent fucking talent to be able to do that. And who's to say, like, just because one person is rapping from intellect and one is rapping from pure unfiltered emotion, it's still coming from, there's still like this inherent artistry and talent to that. That is like, one is not better than the other. They are merely different. I don't know.
Well, you know, there's one dominant culture, man.
Yeah. Speaking of dominant culture, what we were kind of talking about off air, there was another shooting tonight where a black man in San Francisco named Mario Woods was just shot about, I don't know, fucking 35 times, it seemed like, and video got released. And that's been something where, like we kind of were joking about when the mics first got turned on, about how your tweets are kind of they're always these little subversive mini political poems, I feel like, particularly right now because it's such a heated political environment. Like, I don't really have a question other than I just like to hear you talk about things, and I like your perspective, and I'm just wondering, like, I don't know how does it feel to see so many fucking people of color being killed every week, every month, every fucking all the time by people that are, you know, supposedly protecting. I don't know. It disgusts me, and I just
well, wanna... I don't feel especially. I feel like there is a lot of confusion about what people think the police are, you know?
Right.
I think that, I don't know how to really start this conversation because I feel like you're setting me up to say something that's a...
And I don't want you to like, I don't want this to become like some kind of...
I'm not
looking for a headline.
Well, no, I don't really have a good, I don't feel like I have a fully informed perspective. And I'm, you know, I have the same response that everyone should have. I'm scared, you know, like,
yeah.
It's not because I'm scared it's going to happen to me, but I'm scared that all this evidence of something that's not only been going on forever, but something that's just a fundamental reality in my world and anyone who I know intimately, you know, like my... when I think about my family and my base, you know, this is like a given reality that there is danger out there. I just feel like if there's that much evidence of it out there and nothing radically changes, then that is really the problem, you know? Because it's like now all the wild claims of systemic racism from like the 60s and 70s are like transcripts on the table now. It's like, here's the FBI transcripts about COINTELPRO through the 70s. Here's the MK Ultra program and the drug program in the 70s in Oakland. Here's, you know, how the police profit off of citing black life more aggressively in these counties. Here it is right here. This is what it does. What are we going to do about it? Not a motherfucking thing.
Right. And then you have like people like Bill O'Reilly who gets so offended by the fact that there could be systemic racism. He's on TV every night preaching that racism in America is over and there's no such thing. And people believe that.
Because people have the fundamental belief that when someone says something and that they're a trusted voice, that it's truth and it's not like that's corporate code. That's like agenda being spewed at them. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. Like, I don't feel like I'm informed because I'm sifting right through all the shit. And it's like people are so smart that they've co-opted the ideas. They've co-opted not only the acts, not only the weapons, but the ideas, the acts, the language. So it's like people don't even know how to respond to this shit properly. I think we've been so improperly rewired. I mean, we don't realize what we're looking at. I mean, people being blown the fuck away by futuristic mega cops.
Yeah.
I mean, kiss my ass. This shit is...
I mean, it's the army rolling through. Yeah. Like, that's what it looks like when there are... And that's the thing is that even the language, you know what I mean? Whether it's riots or gatherings or protests, but either way, when there are a bunch of people that have an opinion that are in a group together, the fucking army rolls through. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's a bunch of dudes in bulletproof vests and helmets.
Yeah, and it's the shooting in Minneapolis is really was disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Was disturbing too because of all the obvious signs that the perpetrators of the shooting, the white supremacist group guys. I don't know the name of the actual group. But they seem to have gotten some sort of pass from law enforcement to like do that, you know, to lead men away from the protests and then shoot them. And it's like when you say that out loud, people immediately shut it down. Oh, that's ridiculous. But we all know that there are military ties and law enforcement ties to white supremacist groups. That's how they came about.
Mm.
You know, the KKK was started by generals of the fucking Civil War. That's how it started. Mm. They were a paramilitary organization. They went from just, you know, entertaining you know, little silly ideas to mobilizing and becoming a real army, like, soon after that. So that's the foundation of the shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what do you mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
you can't, and that's what I mean. Like, there's no, when you see all the evidence out there, and it's like, when you know just, like, two things, it's like, well, what is there to hide anymore? And, like, what are we really saying? All we're saying is that this is how the world works. We've settled on how the world works. And, you know, black people are cool, but y'all still got to stay right here because it just works too good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, and it, but it's not really about black people being hurt. It's about them being used as a measure of inequality so that a system can be controlled. You know what I mean? It's not about black people being treated badly, because who the fuck cares about that? What it's about is that you gain so much that you have a whole echelon of success that we've never seen,
mm-hmm.
that we don't even know about. That's what people, people talk about black people like who cares? Like black people are being hurt. That's one thing. But what's the benefit? Oh, the benefit. Oh, it's so lush. You know what I mean? Like, look at the world. Like, look at these profits that these prisons make, these companies that own these prisons and these monies that these police counties are able to rob from people.
Right. I mean, something like one in three black men will eventually be in prison at some point in their life, statistically right now.
That's money.
Yeah.
That's money.
And I mean, and here's the thing is that the way that it's handled, even it's so crass in journalistically. You know, there was a story the other day about a white girl that was selling a bunch of drugs in college. Her dad's a DEA agent, and she went viral because she took the quote unquote like happiest looking mugshot, right? And this is at a time where like all the important news that I read is about how prison sentences are so, there's so much inequality in prison sentences, where if that was a teenage black man selling drugs in college, he wouldn't have had bail, you know what I mean? And she got released with no bail, or 30 G's in bail or something like that. But anyway,
it's all about taking responsibility for it. And man, it's really good to, me personally, I just try to let people know in creative ways, you know, that the world is not what it seems, you know, but it's...
Well, and when you said that we've settled, like, that's like a good way to describe it, because, like, my main emotion about all of this is, like, it feels hopeless. Like, it just feels hopeless. At the same time, it feels like we're on this, like, obvious precipice where, like, something has to give and something has to change. But then I look and I go... That's how they felt in the 60s. You know what I mean? That's how they probably felt in the fucking 1800s. Like, this is a cyclical thing where it never actually changes.
Well,
it gets quiet for a while.
I think that, you know, the movement needs to move on from where it ended off in the 60s. Because a lot of people, the leaders of the civil rights movement of the 60s are used against us, you know. People bring up Martin Luther King and all the time, and it's like, but it's like I always like to bring up, you know, he was killed.
Yeah,
they killed him. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like he was great, wasn't he? But they killed him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like all the leaders, you know, having that definite end.
Well, there's like this,
and it's weird because like first they died and under really suspicious circumstances, and then. Because we don't possess, we can't firmly politicize our dead. They're used against us. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and it's like,
this might be a crazy analogy, but hear me out. Like, sometimes when I watch the news and I hear about, there are frequently white journalists that will say, well, this is not what Dr. Martin Luther King had in mind in his dream.
Yeah.
How is that much farther off than a fucking 19-year-old white kid telling me what real hip hop is? You know what I mean? Like, exactly. What the fuck do you know about what Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream was? You know what I mean?
Well, it's not even that. It's just, you know, it's just taking the sound bite, you know. Mm-hmm. But But, you know, that's why myth-making is so important, man, you know? And black people love myths, man. You know, black people are sold a lot of myths. But, you know, I don't really... It's funny. I feel like we're talking about a lot of particular...
Yeah, I told you, I've been locked in the house for a month, so I needed to talk.
Nah, it's all good, but you know, I don't really know. All this hits me similar to how everyone else hits everyone else, but right. I will say that the only reason why I feel really just engaged by this is because we've been in a war for 15 years,
right?
And the fact that that's normal is really weird, you know what I mean? And it's like, but the reason why it's normal is because our immediate surroundings aren't threatened. Yeah. But just understanding how that like affects the world is important. Like, because when we talk about the cops, I mean, that's the one thing that struck me when the Ferguson protest was turned into the Ferguson debacle and called a riot. Was, you know, all the amazing weaponry that was unveiled, and like that to me is everything. That says everything right there. It's like, okay, this is why the war needs to come to a close, because we're bringing these global pacification powers, these amazing body destroying technologies, like really body destroying technologies. We're just putting a little bit of them everywhere. You know what I mean? And you know, that snowballs into a bunch of shit, you know. And if people think that cops are doing genuine police work anymore, more they're really not, you know. There's, if your data is up for grabs, you know, it's just about paperwork and finding out stuff and then reverse engineering crimes, and so it's just, I don't know how, I don't see how people can trust anything that we have. So in step with that, you know, do something that promotes some happy shit.
Turn up.
Yeah. But yeah, man, you got me talking about this shit, man. But man, I'd be at the house, man, just thinking about plots. Thinking about plots.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry that I like tried to go. I'm sorry that we went there. But like, I you know, here's the thing: is that I'm in my head a lot. I'm alone a lot as well. You know what I mean? And I think about these things all the time. And I go, who would I want to talk about these things with? And you're a fucking prime candidate.
Well, man, I will say this, man: race in America is completely upside down.
It is.
The whole concept of it is completely fucked.
It's so interesting too. I try to get my read on a little bit. I try to do some reading. I read Ta-Nehisi Coates' book.
Oh yeah.
The world against me. No, the world, and I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
Something with the world and me.
Yeah.
But he uses the word body, like they will try to destroy my body. Like he talks about how, you know, black parents, they beat their kids because they want you to know, like, if you fuck up, I'm doing this to hurt your body, so that you know that if you do this and get caught by the wrong person, they will end your body. Like they will destroy your body. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that's the actual, he uses the word body a lot that way.
Yeah.
I found that, it was just a perspective that I'd never... that I hadn't really thought of or heard, and I was just kind of like, wow.
Well, I don't know, man. Yeah, it's a real physical experience, you know? It's a physical experience being different. I think a part of what makes... I don't know, a part of what makes black people great entertainers is because of their adaptability, you know what I mean? It's kind of used against us, but there's a certain kind of adaptability that's begged of you, probably, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you grew up in most backgrounds, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that urgency, that translates to a lot of different things. But... that's a great book, man.
Yeah.
That's a great dude. He lives in Paris, man. That's where a lot of black writers go.
Do you ever get back there?
I go to Paris a lot. That's where Mike Ladd lives. That's a friend of mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mike Ladd, he's similarly in an exile.
It's so crazy because, like, I feel like there's nothing that could get brought up without, like, some tragedy getting brought up. And I'm like, oh, you bring up Paris and then there's a tragedy. I don't want to, I don't know. Like,
no, I want to talk about that all the way, man. All
right.
Because
I would love to hear about that.
That is.
Okay.
Because Paris is a very beautiful city. I spent a lot of time there. I went to school there.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
I went to school for a year there. It's where my baby mama is from. And it's a beautiful city, man. I played the Bataclan.
Did you?
Three times.
Did you?
Yeah.
Does your daughter live over there?
No, but she'd like to.
Yeah.
But yeah, how crazy is...
So you played that place three times, you said.
Yeah, but it's really hard to imagine all that carnage there. But you know, it's hard to... it's hard for us to deprioritize that, too. You know what I mean? It's like, what pocket of dead people do you honor more?
Right, because there were, like, three other huge tragedies in that same 24-hour span or something.
Well, yeah, it's, but it's, you know, it's, I mean, but it's, that being said, it's an awful attack, and who the hell can imagine that shit?
Yeah.
That being said, look at what they've done with that. What have they done with those dead bodies? They've started multiple bombing campaigns in Syria, and you know, Britain just joined in, and it's like they're creating a climate in the Middle East in that area that's so volatile.
Doesn't it kind of feel? It feels like history repeating itself yet again.
Well, it is. It's not even, and there's no, people can't be confused about. I think people need to stop giving people the benefit of the doubt. I think we've passed, I mean, we maybe haven't passed the point of giving people the benefit of the doubt, but it will be helpful because the U.S. is very clear with its objectives. They want to exasperate some weird war and just take over the world through everyone relinquishing powers and being terrified by these
villains,
by these unpredictable brown people,
yeah,
who we have to keep out of our borders because they can be. It's like, it's weird to me about the refugee shit because it's like they're killing the refugees. That's why they're leaving. Like, I know it seems like that Daesh is killing Americans, but they aren't. They're killing Muslims.
Right.
You know what I mean? So when they flee that march of death, it'd be to our advantage to embrace them rather than leave them there to you know, and it's like, it's really, but when you build that climate where racism and xenophobia is like so essential to your economics and like, and your business model in your war is to, like, just make it worse, you know? So, of course, this is what happens. But I don't really know how that's going to resolve. To me, that's a problem that's, like, how do you get past that?
Yeah.
All these people, like waves of people trying to get out of these conflicts. I'm like, oh, sorry, America and the EU, we're too, our race politics are too stark right now for us to accept you.
Right.
Y'all are just too dark.
Mm-hmm.
This shit is too weird. Y'all too dark.
Right.
That shit is, I mean, that shit is.
And I think that the people, I think that the repercussions get forgotten about because it's like how these, I don't know. What's going to happen to the 3-year-old 15 years down the line who knows that, like, yo, USA hates us? You know what I mean?
Well,
I don't know.
But I'm saying governments do that on purpose.
Yeah.
Governments know that shit.
Right.
There's people who go to school forever to figure out how this ends.
Yeah.
The government hires them and they know. They're like, okay, how can we make this war? We made this much money. We spent all these, we write blank checks for all these different operations. How can we keep this shit up?
Right.
Let's keep these kids coming.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't like to say that outright, but it's like, I just listen to military analysts who were like, come on, guys, what are y'all doing? Mm-hmm. Stop.
Mm-hmm.
Stop, or either stop or do it. Either end the war or stop. You know what I mean? Because this shit is like, and it's like everyone says it. This isn't, it's not even like leftists even think that the war is some ploy.
Right.
It's just common sense.
I'll say the one thing that like really surprised me about the reaction, about the quick reaction, because it was big news the day after the Paris tragedy that France started a bombing campaign on Syria like the next day, you know what I mean? And people said, oh, it's a powerful move or what have you, depending on what part of the news you're reading.
Yeah.
But what I was surprised by was that, if you remember, there was a big stink in the States after 9/11 about freedom fries and like no more French toast. It was like freedom toast and fucking freedom fries or whatever.
Yeah, I remember that.
And the reason for that, and you know, people dumping out French wine, the reason for that was because France was one of the countries that said, hey, you guys are like, you guys don't need to invade Iraq. Like, that's not the right move right now, and we're not going to join you on that. And people went, oh, France isn't on our side, then fuck their fries. You know what I mean? And it's like, so I was surprised to see France take such a – I mean, it's all so fucking nuanced. I have no – I don't know enough about it. But I was personally surprised to hear that they were starting bombing the next day. So that didn't seem like a very French thing to me.
That's crazy. That's amazing that you picked out that difference. I completely remember that. That's very – look at how far we've come.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that's what I'm saying is like it's a different boat when it happens in your country. It's like, you know, if you're the fucking...
Well, it's a different boat because the war has been going on since then.
Right, right. And this new Syrian war and is all linked into like what happened 15 years ago.
And it's not the same people. Yeah. That was Al-Qaeda. This is ISIS. And it's like, who is that? You know, and it's like, it's way worse now because look how quickly they mobilized.
Right.
They planted that passport, made it seem like it was a refugee,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever, I mean, who, but it's like, who planted the passport? Either one of the actual terrorists, the attackers, mm-hmm. or like someone else. Like whoever did it, it benefits Daesh and the war machine. You know what I mean? It's like, and all it does is make people lose.
Right.
There is no West versus this Islamic monster. No. There's war machines versus average people.
Right.
You know, who are fragmented by race politics being generated by the war machines.
Mm-hmm. You want to hear some crazy shit, and I don't know where this fits into the whole puzzle of everything, but this is just me trying to apply my actual life to things that are happening.
Exactly.
Right? My dad is career military.
Oh, tight.
Yeah, that's how we ended up in Alaska. He was in the Air Force for 25 years or something. I don't know. But his last assignment, his last tour of duty, he was in Guam for like a year maybe. And we stayed in Alaska while he was doing that. It was his last little tour. And he was there in Guam. He was a medic in the Air Force taking care of Kurdish refugees. That was in 96. That was in 96. And here we are 20 years later, and we're still talking about Kurds. Yeah. Like the Kurds are fighting ISIS, who are fighting Syrians, who are fighting this and that and the other.
Yeah.
And it's still, there's still a fucking cyclical refugee thing going on 20 years later.
It's still quagmire. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's crazy, man.
Right?
Yeah, I don't have too many family in the military, but but I had a lot of friends who went in
and
came out all buff.
Right. One other thing. I was talking to my mom about this today, actually. I was surprised to learn, like, when my father joined the military, part of the promise of that was if you're career military and you retire from us, like you work your 20 to 25 years and you retire, you'll have health care for the rest of your life through the military, right?
Yeah.
And so it turns out now my father, I think you know, like has Alzheimer's disease and needs more medical attention than the average person his age.
Yeah.
And they have since canceled that policy. And so he doesn't have health insurance through the military. Like, they do it through my mom's, like, through her job that she retired from, which I just thought was crazy because here we are, like, pumping so many people into the military and keeping all these wars going and you know, you get this promise of, like, you know, oh, this will change your life, and then you get home and they don't take care of you, it seems like. So, I don't know.
I don't know what the VA's deal is, but I don't see – that's not a responsive organization, man.
Right.
That'll do. I mean, I do have a cousin who's in the military, and he needs to go to them for meds for various ailments that he got. I kind of forgot what exactly struck him. I think some kind of PTSD thing. Mm-hmm. But it's impossible, you know what I mean? He spends, it's like a job doing that.
Yeah.
But, and I've never thought about it, but through my life, he just always referred to it as just a hassle. And it's like, wow, right. That's amazing. But yeah, man, what is that about? No soldiers can't get no love after the fact.
Right.
But, you know, you got robots flying over farms, blowing up kids and grandma. Yeah.
This is a dark conversation. We went there.
Yo, man, you caught me, man. I'm just out in the streets, man.
I've needed to just fucking, you know, brainstorm some fucking thoughts that I had floating around too. So I don't know.
Well, it's all fine and dandy. We're just kicking raps, man.
Yeah, let's talk about some happy things real quick. Like, tell me about things that you have coming up in support of Thumbs that you guys can go purchase right now.
Oh yeah, Thumbs is a digital release. Get it where you can get it on.
It's
there.
On Spotify.
It's on Spotify.
You know what I'm gonna start telling
it's on
people
iTunes.
To do? Hey, when you go to sleep tonight, put it on repeat, but on mute. And then just keep playing it on Spotify over and over and over, and he'll see them checks, man.
You'll see them checks. Percentages of pennies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on Spotify's. I'm on the SoundClouds. I'm on the iTunes. Please go see Thumbs or
tonight.
Listen to it.
Hey, you can go see them tonight.
Yeah, go see it today.
At Low End Theory.
Also, I don't have too many videos for this album, but I have a video for my song Much. And you can see that.
Is it out already?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I need to go watch it. You've always been a big you're a big music video influence. You always go in on the music videos. I got to give it up.
That's what's up, man.
Yeah, your videos are super trill.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And yeah, see me tonight. Play songs from Thumbs.
With the Underground Railroad.
With the Underground Railroad at Low End Theory with Daddy Kev and Nobody and all them.
All the confidants.
But, yeah, Thumbs, I may have a physical release of it coming out soon in the near future. And besides that...
Are you going to do CDs, you think, or like vinyl or something? Or
I don't know. I don't know if I'm doing CDs again for a while.
They almost kind of feel... They feel done. I don't know.
Well, for my personal economy, they've always been important. But yeah. I don't even feel like this... I don't know.
I kind of feel like at this point, I might switch over to vinyl if I do another thing, just because, like, at this point, people don't want it to play. They want it to be signed. And so it's like, you know, why not get half as many and just sell them at shows for fucking more money, and then they still get something to and then that way they can hang it on their wall or something.
Definitely. I definitely prefer vinyl over CDs. But I feel like there's just less rules. I think things are getting so loose and weird.
Yeah. The vinyl thing is tough, too. There's like a little, almost like a weird fucking indie acts are getting pushed out of vinyl. I'm sure you know about that, no? There's not enough plants for as many people that want vinyl and all this shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's pretty, we're lucky. We have a lot of good plants here in L.A. Yeah.
Anyway, man, I don't know. I had a good time with this, and I appreciate you going there.
We've been talking for a long time, man.
Yeah, I'm sure there's still some people listening, and I'm sure there's some people that are, like, steaming over things that I have said, and that's perfectly fine.
I blacked out at least 3 times, so I can't be held accountable for half the things I said.
Right. Oh, man. Sometimes when I do these, I go, man, I don't want to listen back. I've already said something crazy, but it happens. Yeah, man, thank you. I appreciate it.
Tight.
Yeah. Tell the people where you're at. Bus driver.
You can see me on the Twitters, Bus Driver with 2 R's. You can see me on the Instagrams. I'm going to be touring next year in the United States and in Europe with various people. Please see me rapping.
Go see this man rap.
Yeah. Just please do.
I know that this has been a long chain of me just blowing smoke up your ass and giving you compliments, but I will say from personal experience, Bus Driver is one of the few people that goes on stage and you can truly see him losing himself in the music. And as a performer myself, I love to see that. And so it's worth watching him in concert.
Tight. Come see me rap.
There you go. All right, man. Well, thank you. My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, base with two S's. His name is Ben Shim. I forgot to say that part. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat. Go to youtube.com/kindaneat where you're going to see Bus Driver perform. What song are you going to do?
Species of Property.
You're going to see Bus Driver perform Species of Property. And you're already one of our top 15 videos. We've done a bunch of these, and you're in the top 15, which I think is a very solid spot. You're about to break 200,000. Like, your video killed the last one. Podcast, subscribe. Just like search for Kinda Neat on the podcast app and subscribe. Let's get back into the habit of leaving reviews, 5-star reviews, and rate it and all that stuff. I want to get to like 200 reviews and make us seem legit. I don't know. So maybe like somebody will call and make me do voiceover work if you do that. I don't know. Other than that, thank you guys for tuning in. I'm sorry that I took such a long break. I got really busy. And that is my man, Bus Driver, and I'm Intuition, and this was Kinda Neat.